And a very good evening to you. A very good evening to you. How are you doing this Wednesday, the 24th of February 2021? It's myself, the BBG, with you for the next couple of hours. Two very, very interesting guests, as usual, joining me on the programme this evening. Looking forward to your comments too. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter, at BBG Richie.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Gerald Celente, the publisher of the legendary Trends Journal, will join the program in hour two. Don't miss that, trendsresearch.com, Gerald Celente on the program. Before that, we're off to Knutsford, not too far from where I'm based, to speak to the landlady of the railway in Knutsford. Laura Layton will be on the program, talking about life in lockdown for publicans and what life might look like for publicans in, well, after lockdown ends. Now, having one or two issues in studio today, more than one or two issues, just to give you a heads up, we've got here a state-of-the-art BBC all bells and whistles radio studio, but I run it from here myself. There isn't anybody else here, just me, and there is a technical problem here that can't be looked at until Friday, sadly. My great friend Paul Ripley, the impresario himself from Fab Radio in Manchester, great engineer, will be with me on Friday. But before that, my sound is not great, my own sound. There's all sorts of sound processors and things here, and I don't know what to do about it. Fiddled away with it, but I'm going to persevere today and tomorrow. But if I sound a bit scratchy occasionally, there isn't anything I can do about it. We're just going to grin and bear it and get through it. I hope you don't mind. Anywho, improvise, adapt and overcome. That's my mantra. That's my motto. Alrighty. Now, Jonathan Van Tam is this country's Deputy Chief Medical Officer. Jonathan Van Tam. You've heard me mention him before. This morning, he was on ITV and Sky answering questions from the audiences. He was on Good Morning Britain taking questions, and he was on Sky News with Sophie Ridge. Carefully vetted questions, of course. Carefully vetted questions, okay? He never broke sweat, did Jonathan Van Tam, or JVT, to his friends. ITV First, he was asked by Susanna Reid, how can he be sure that the vaccine is safe for pregnant women or for those aiming to become pregnant? Jonathan Van Tam.
So the first thing to say is all of the clinical trials were performed in people who were had lots of kind of exclusions, and one of them was being pregnant, because you never start clinical trials in pregnant women. That always follows later. And those trials are underway, actually. So basically, you don't have many, you don't have any pregnant women when you enroll them in the trial. And then inevitably, there are some people who fall pregnant during the course of the trial. And they are followed very, very carefully. And they are still being followed very, very carefully, but the numbers are very small. So when we say, for the time being, we advise the vaccine in pregnant women who are really at very significant risk of COVID-19, we are saying, not that we believe it is unsafe in the wider population of pregnant women, but we don't yet have that extensive data, but we will have in time. And right now, if you are pregnant and you have very significant health conditions that mean, you know, you might die of COVID, then for goodness sake, you know, have that conversation with your doctor about whether it's the right thing for you to do.
Yeah. The thing is, if you're a young woman, even if you're unhealthy, even if you are unhealthy, if you're a young woman and pregnant, the chances of you dying of coronavirus are in the millions to one. Okay. Nobody asked him any questions about any of these answers. Over on Sky then, a bit later on, he was asked, why has the vaccination rate dropped off so dramatically in recent days? Listen to his answer I believe he's lying here.
There are always going to be supply fluctuations. These are new vaccines. By and large, the manufacturers have not made them or anything like them before. And the process of making a vaccine is one where basically you kind of set the equipment up and leave it all to kind of do its thing, a bit like beer making, really. And what you get at the end is not something that you can say is identical every time in terms of the yield, the amount of doses that you can then make from that batch, as it were. So you do get kind of batch size variations, and that's kind of natural, and it's going to take a few months before the manufacturers really get into this very confident, very steady manufacturing routine.
Yeah, I believe he's telling Porky Pies there. And Sky News science correspondent Thomas Moore is not convinced, I don't think, that Van Tam is telling the truth either. Thomas Moore had this to say about the fluctuations in the production of the vaccine.
Both Pfizer and AstraZeneca have had problems in keeping up with demand, and that is a problem, and it will be a problem for the whole government program for lifting lockdown too, because everything hinges on the supply of this vaccine and that the manufacturers can keep to delivery schedules. Now, the government doesn't tell us how many doses are being delivered each week, but we...
Why not? Why doesn't the government tell the media how many doses of vaccines are being delivered to the UK each week? Why not? That's not, you wouldn't imagine there's any really good reason for keeping that information under wraps. The government might say, well, we keep it under wraps because we're worried about security. We're worried about our supply being attacked on the high seas. But that's nonsense. That's nonsense. You can tell people, you can tell the media how many doses you are getting into the country on a weekly basis, but the government chooses not to. Listen to what he says next.
But we have to take the Deputy Chief Medical Officer at his word that is the reason that there has been this downturn in vaccination rates.
We've got to take Jonathan Van Tam at his word that the manufacturing process has slowed down, hence the reduction in vaccination rates. We have to take him at his word, says Thomas Moore. I wouldn't.
We can only hope that it is a temporary blip and that as the manufacturing capacity is scaled up, that they can get back on track, because if people aren't protected, then that clearly fails the first of the government's four tests for easing lockdown.
Yeah. If not enough people get the vaccine, the lockdowns are not going to end and the unvaccinated will eventually be blamed, I suppose. Now, this is very important. I believe Jonathan Van Tam is telling lies. I have no evidence to support that. And if I was to find out that I was wrong, I would issue immediately an apology, straight up. But I think what's already happened is, I think they've already hit the refuse nicks. The vaccine flew out of the traps when it came to the over 70s and the so-called extremely vulnerable. But I think as they are hitting younger folks, and by younger folks, I'm talking about people in their 60s and 50s and 40s. As they're hitting those people, they are being told no thanks. No thanks. They don't know what to do. Vaccination rate has plummeted, so they're blaming the manufacturing process, when only weeks ago they were bragging, weren't they? They were bragging, they were shouting from the rooftops that this was going swimmingly, that by mid-February they'd have 15 million vaccinated. They said they reached that target only a couple of weeks ago. They said that, oh, pretty soon now we'll be into the over 50s. It's going swimmingly. Why would they have said that if they had any inclination that there was going to be a problem with production? I think they're lying, dear listener. Not for the first time. I think more and more people, whether they consume the independent media or not, whether they read independent media, whether they listen to programmes like this, I reckon a lot of people are very hesitant about this vaccine. Like my friend Hayden Hewitt. Like my great friend Hayden Hewitt, who isn't an anti-vaxxer, who has no problem in general with vaccines. But Hayden said he would prefer, not to have this one and let it play out for a bit and see how people get on. And I think that's what's happening. No proof, mind. It's just my opinion. Okay. Now, the vaccine passport, or the prospect of it might help them expedite the take-up of the vaccine. You know, telling people you can't go to the pub, the cinema, you can't go, well, anywhere, unless you can prove you've been vaccinated. That might help them increase the take-up. Education Secretary Gavin Williamson on LBC Radio with Nick Ferrari this morning. Well, he said he'd do anything to get back to a restaurant again.
Be happy to, and I've already said I would, have a so-called vaccine passport to facilitate entry to theatres, to cinemas, to restaurants, and possibly to facilitate travel overseas as and when it were possible, Mr. Williamson.
I think I would probably do pretty much anything to be able to enjoy all those lovely things. That,
do you think they will become a reality?
I think the idea of going to a restaurant with your family or going to the theatre is something that we all really want to see.
Do you think they will become a reality?
Well, Michael Gove has been charged with actually looking at this. There are many challenges with it, and it's really important to look right across the spectrum, both the benefits it would bring, but also some of the challenges it would bring. Michael's going to be doing that, and we look forward to the results of what he finds.
Yeah. The presenter, Nick Ferrari, is a weaselly little bastard, isn't he? He said that he would be only too happy to have the vaccine himself. Yeah, arsehole. Over to Radio 5 Live then, 12 minutes past 5. You're at the Richie Allen Show. It is live from Salford in the northwest. A grim, gloomy Salford day it's been today here. So it has. Miserable. There had been a grand stretch in the evenings. Now it's gotten very dark again. Anyway, just telling you. Radio 5 Live this morning, Nikki Campbell hosted a phone-in on the vaccine passport. Ben in Hales-Owen, a caller, Ben in Hales-Owen, was sadly typical of the calls that managed to get on air. Listen to Ben on the prospect of the vaccine passport.
Look, I think they're absolutely essential, and I actually don't care if they're divisive. I don't want to be sat next to somebody so selfish in a pub that won't have the vaccine. And I'm actually comfortable with the vaccine passport being essential. And in a way, to almost punish those who won't have the vaccine, because I think they're so selfish. And I'll explain why this matters to me, Nikki. My sister has, they found at Christmas, a cancer on her kidney. She's had her operation cancelled 4 times. The last time, Nikki, she was actually dressed ready to go down for surgery.
Yeah, so his sister has had her operation cancelled 4 times. What's that got to do with vaccine passports? Don't expect Nikki Campbell, the helpless, hapless buffoon of a BBC presenter, to say, hang on, Ben, what has your sister's multiple cancellations got to do with vaccine passports? It's a dreadful situation for your sister, but that's down to the National Health Service prioritising people with a respiratory infection that has a 99.8% survival rate, Ben, over your sister who's got a deadly cancer on her fucking kidneys. What's it gonna do with whether people take vaccine passports or not, you gum bean? But of course, Nikki Campbell doesn't say that.
And it was cancelled. She lives in Nottingham. The reason it's been cancelled 4 times is because in Nottingham, they've been having to take COVID patients from Birmingham and Peterborough. And they're taking up the beds.
Yeah, they're taking up the beds. Again, what has it got to do with the guy in the pub who hasn't had his vaccine passport?
So everybody should... This is a way of almost forcing people to have the vaccine, and that frees up the beds. It protects the NHS, which is the absolute aim of any strategy for dealing with COVID. And arguments of, well, you know, the administration arguments against it, quite frankly, don't stack up against what is already, you know, what is already a huge human cost.
It's a way of forcing people to have the vaccine. Of course, it's a way of forcing people to have the vaccine. Of course it is. It's what it's meant to do. You know, deprive people of their ability, their liberty to move around, to shop, to pop into a pub for a pint on a Saturday, to go to a game, to tell them you can't do that unless you accept a vaccine that you don't need, that isn't really a vaccine. And sadly, Ben in Hales-Owen was typical of the calls that made it onto the BBC's phone-in programme, Radio 5 this morning. Look, of course I'm suspicious. I've been around the block 500 times. They are screening these calls and they are allowing 5 pro-passport calls on for every 1 that is against the passport. Do you have any proof of that, Richie? No, I don't. It's what I suspect, and I'm coming from a place of experience. I know how this stuff works. I used to do it myself. Did I do that? Did I do that? Did I slant phone-ins? No, I never did. Hand on heart, I never, ever did slant phone-ins. I would sometimes, when I was getting maybe 3 or 4 calls that were very samey, you know, in terms of, we're all for abortion, we're all for abortion and a woman's right to choose. Of course I would try and find a lady or a gentleman, might be coming from a different perspective, to say, well, I don't support abortion. That's just natural. That's good. You want to hear all sides of it. But would I slant a phone in? Would I slant a phone in because I wanted to hear from people whom I personally agreed with? No, not on your Nelly. Never in a million years. But that's what's going on the BBC now. Do check out richieallen.co.uk. Very interesting story in The Telegraph this afternoon. The Telegraph newspaper, which fluctuates, it's a great word today, fluctuates between brilliant stories tearing down or attempting to tear down this junk science around lockdowns. But also you'll get stories on there all in favour of vaccinations and lockdowns and all of that. But very good story today. They gave an opinion piece to a teacher in Essex. We don't know male or female. A teacher is female. We'll say female then. We'll say female. So they got a woman who teaches in Essex secondary school students to write an opinion piece about masks. She compared forcing children to wear masks to, well, to like something out of Gilead, she said. She called it dystopian and abhorrent. And she'd done a very good, or did a very good job, I'm speaking of teaching, she did a very good job of explaining why masks are harmful to children's well-being. It's a good piece in The Telegraph. You've got to buy The Telegraph. If you don't buy the physical copy, you've got to subscribe to it online. So I've nicked a couple of paragraphs. I don't think The Telegraph will mind, as I have given the paper full credit. But do get on to richieallen.co.uk. This teacher essentially says today, I will not force the masks on the kids, and I won't wear one myself either. It's a good piece, and I've picked out one or two bits of it for the website today. Interesting stuff on there today as well about policing and Twitter and all of that. And a guy who wrote a book 3 years ago about the transgender movement, specifically the aspect of the transgender movement that wants to put children on puberty blockers and help children achieve surgery far quicker than maybe they should do, right? This guy took it on, called Ryan T. Anderson. He took this on in his book called When Harry Became Sally 3 years ago. The reviews of the book say the book is very academic. It's very well written. It's certainly not in any way phobic, in terms of transphobic. It's just a good book. But Amazon has basically taken it down. And there's a piece on my website about that today as well, richieallen.co.uk. I think it's worth taking a look. And there's also a horrifying story that came out of Buffalo, New York today about a new curriculum in primary schools in Buffalo, right across Buffalo, the school system, a new curriculum teaching children that all white people are complicit in perpetuating systemic racism. It's mad stuff now. Some of the things they want children to take as a given. I don't mind putting stuff out there and debating it, but they're telling children that certain things are a given, like that European justice is more retributive and harsh and punitive, whereas African justice is restorative and it prioritises healing. Now, I don't have a xenophobic bone in my body, but I've seen plenty of videos on the internet, on liveleak.com, of poor creatures in parts of Africa, Nigeria, Congo in places, getting necklaced by villagers kicking 9 bells of shit out of them and necklaced because they were caught stealing. Now, is that the norm in Africa? Probably not. I'm not saying it is. I'm not generalising. But don't tell children in Buffalo, hey, listen, it's all hunky-dory over there in Africa when it comes to the justice, because it patently is not. Hey, Winnie Mandela, anyone? Don't get me started now. What are they doing to children? I'm going to start sounding like Mary Whitehouse. God be with Mary Whitehouse. Bring her back. Mary Whitehouse was so right. She was right about everything. Mary Whitehouse, God damn it. Now, I'm going to say this once more, and I'll say it at the end of the programme. You might experience an audio issue when I'm speaking. Make any jokes about my Irish accent and I'll find you and I will shamrock the bejesus out of you. I'll bury you in shamrocks. There's an issue here with them. It's not with the microphone. It isn't with the wiring. Very, very high-tech radio studio here. We've got processors and microprocessors delivering the sound and the audio, and there is an issue with one of the machines, and it won't be looked at until Friday. Okay? But I'm soldiering on. Oh, I'm not having a diva fit. No, I'm not throwing my milkshake at the studio window and going full Begbie from Trainspotting, kicking the shit out of the cat. No, I'm not. I'm just going to get on with it because I'm a real man. Gary Cooper, that's what we do. We just get on with things. We don't kick the cat. Kicking cats is wrong. Right, where was I? Neil Oliver, then, is an archaeologist. He's a historian and a regular guest on Talk Radio. Here is Neil with Mike Graham. Neil Oliver says, the idea of this being the last lockdown, well, tis but a fantasy, me dears.
The idea that this is the last lockdown is a fantasy. I really do. You can see the way in which everything about climate change, which had sort of gone into abeyance. Mm. We weren't hearing so much about that for a year.
Yeah.
And it's back again. And I could easily see circumstances in which there's a neat sort of segue, a sort of sleight of hand, where the restrictions that have been in place to control COVID could conveniently become restrictions that would bring down the amount of carbon emissions.
Oh, yeah.
Cars are parked on the pavement.
Absolutely.
People aren't going anywhere. And they might well say, well, this used to be about COVID, but hey, now that we've all learned to not go anywhere, not travel anywhere, stay in our houses... Yeah. That could quite easily be, by a sleight of hand, that could become, and now it's about carbon emissions.
Yeah, because it's based on the same nonsense of modelling and, you know, projection and, you know, what the future truth will be rather than what the actual current truth is. And you can very easily see, I would imagine, Neil, people sort of shaking their fist at you for driving down the road in a car instead of being on a bike.
Yeah, there is no way... Short of putting, short of military curfews and whatever, and people being shot on sight, there is no way that a government can maintain control of people. The only way it works, short of that kind of, you know, Eastern Bloc coercion, is if people police each other.
Right.
And to some extent, that's already been achieved. Mm. You know, you need neighbour watching neighbour, and you need people controlled by the censure of their peers. So that things like smoking, you know, that didn't diminish in the way that it has because of laws. It became something that was, that you were pariah.
Yeah.
If you were smoking in an office or smoking in a shop.
Yeah, people assume that if you were still smoking, despite all of the warnings about it, that you must be an idiot, effectively.
So that's how that's done.
Yeah.
You know, it's we police, societies are trained to and molded into policing each other. And that much has already been achieved.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy, is Neil Oliver. The stuff about climate change, you know, because I get so much wrong, and that's not modesty, by the way, I get a lot wrong. You know this, you've been with me for years now. I've been saying since the outset of the lockdowns that climate change, you know, we're going to hear more about it. And then they would look at the success. Well, lockdown, of course, is not and could not be a success. But they will claim it is, and they will basically look at lockdown and say, we can apply some of this to dealing with climate change in the near future. And this COP21, is it, taking place in Glasgow in November this year, later this year, I reckon there will be a lot of talk, A, about getting cars out of our lives full stop, but B, what we can do in terms of restricting people's movements. And I've suggested something a long time ago on the radio show. I wouldn't be surprised in the near future if there was a postcode allowance for Sunday outings. Can you imagine that? They might say, I tell you what now, we'll look at Langworthy Road in Salford. And on this Sunday, the odd-numbered houses, if they like, can take their cars out to the country or take their cars into Manchester or whatever. But the even-numbered houses can't. They might not do it like that. They might say, right, everybody in the M6 postcode, you can take your cars out on Sundays, say the second and fourth Sunday of the month. Everybody in M5, in Salford. You can take your cars out the first and third Sundays of the month. It sounds bizarre when you say that. It sounds like, well, there's no way that's going to happen. But I think it probably will. This is where we're going, dear listener. What time is it now? 24 minutes past the hour. Gerald Celente, trendsresearch.com. Love the man. He's been with me since my Spain days. Joins me for our monthly chat in hour two. Very soon, I'm off to Mobberley in Cheshire, not far from Knutsford. Laura Layton, whom I only know online, but I like Laura. Gotten to know her online over the last couple of years and not had the pleasure of visiting the Railway Inn. She's a landlady. Popular lady is Laura. She put out a tweet today that said, enough is enough. She said, if you come to my pub, you'll be ordering at the bar, sitting with who the hell you like. I will shake everybody's hand, give them a hug or a kiss because I've done this forever. Enough's enough, says Laura. We'll have a chat with Laura about life in lockdown, the future of pubs and clubs and village pubs in this country, the future going forward, the great British pub, and what Laura might be asked to do in the event this lockdown does come to an end in June. You know, they're talking about April for pubs to be serving outside and stuff like that. Vaccine passports. Laura's got a lot to say. She'll be with me shortly. And you can tweet the programme. It's BBG Richie on Twitter. I do love hearing from you. So do tweet me, please. Trucker. How you doing, Trucker? I was thinking about the vax, Rich, and I'd take a traditional type one, not a RNA gene therapy one, says Trucker. People think AstraZeneca 1 is like that, but it's not. In fact, the cell nucleus is penetrated with those vector carrier ones and DNA inserted. I'm very uncomfortable with that, says Trucker. Thank you for your comment, Trucker. So you'd have an old school type of vaccine, but you wouldn't have one of these more recent vaccines, these RNA vaccines. Fair play to you. Okay, that's your prerogative. And nice to hear that, by the way, the kind of contrary point of view there. Let's have a scroll down. A lot of you were really glad to hear Dr. Pat Morrissey on the Richie Allen show last night. So was I. Good to have him on the programme. If you missed any of that, go to Spotify, Podomatic or iTunes and listen back to it. I think you can listen back to it on my website as well. Hi to Amanda Thompson. Amanda says, Richie, we just have to get some landlords to run pubs for unvaccinated people then, says Amanda. Thank you, Amanda. Kevin says, why are patients being sent hundreds of miles to different hospitals? An ambulance round trip of hundreds of miles and not available for local emergencies? That sounds like bullshit to me, says Kevin. Thank you, Kevin. And my friend Dean Smith says, the vaccine pass will only work if they mandate it. If they leave it to businesses and a free market, there will be many businesses that will open to everybody and would probably do very well. But I can see vaccine apartheid in the new future, says Dean. In the near future. Dean, I tend to agree with most of that. I think it's likely if they introduce vaccine passports, my personal opinion is they will probably go down the Israeli route in terms of they will tell the hotels and the pubs and the gyms that they must refuse those who do not have the clearance of the COVID certificate or the vaccine passport. That is just my opinion. But I've been wrong so many times before. You just don't know with me, really. So we're off to Mobberley right soon to speak to Laura Layton. Gerald Celente in the second hour. Your Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, the BBG, not the BBC. Always a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, that's music from Corner Shop, of course, and Brim Full of Ashes, the Norman Cook remix. Yeah, that's the sort of information you need now. It's the Norman Cook remix. It's basically 29 minutes to 6 o'clock, Wednesday's programme, February 24th, 2021, the BBG with you. Delighted to welcome to the programme, delighted, I really am delighted, the landlady of the Railway Inn in Mobberley in Cheshire, the one and only Laura Layton. How you doing, Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too shabby at all, thanks. That's a lovely sound there. You said to me earlier on that you're almost like a cave woman there. You said that the internet's not great. We might have some trouble. You sound great, Laura. Thanks for coming on. And great tweet today, which got the attention of a lot of people in these times. Tell us, before we get into what's happening now and where we might end up in terms of the Great British Pub, what has lockdown meant for you and your business?
Well, you know, we've been really lucky, really. We've got a lovely, we live in a lovely, lovely place. We've got plenty of grounds to run around in. The kids love it, you know, having a place for themselves, everything else. We've been lucky. We've had grants, totaling probably about £40,000. And we own the business, so our outgoings aren't crazy compared to some people. I think we worked out that shut, it costs us about £4,500.
Over the year, is that right?
No, that's a month.
Oh, a month. So, Christ, right.
Wow. Yeah, so we've got like our mortgage, which is about £3,000, and then the bills on top of that, which is about £1,500. So we're muddling through, and we're okay paying that. You know, I'm in a fortunate position. My parents have owned this business for 32 years, so, you know, that does make a big difference. But, you know, that money comes to it runs out eventually. The time that we've been short, we've probably missed out on taking, I'd say, at least £250,000.
Yeah.
So that does hit your pocket. But there's plenty of businesses that won't ever come through this because they haven't got that financial cushion that we've got from being here for so long. And we own our pub. So, and that is a massive, massive benefit to somebody that's just running it as a franchise or as a manager in a pub.
Major difference. When the industry says, when you get, you know, heads of the pub and hotel industry in the country, when you hear them on the BBC saying that if things don't change, more than half the pubs in the country might disappear, is that the sort of thing you hear yourself?
I do, but then why are they not coming out and being more vocal about it? You know, all right, there's been a few. I think Hugh Osmond from Punch Taverns has been on with Julia Hartley Brewer this week saying that the, you know, it's complete and utter idiocy, like the fact that we're not going to be able to serve inside until the 15th of May. But why is he only making his voice heard now? You know, where was he in last March or a year ago, you know? And I think Tim Martin's come out and said the odd thing, but none of these big pub bosses are bothered, because what happens if they if their pub goes, oh, well, we'll sell it and convert it to flats, or we'll sell it for housing, or, you know, something like that.
It's been difficult over the years. I know that for 20 or more years, pubs have been struggling in this country anyway, not necessarily down to, you know, people's inability to run pubs, but external problems, external influences on the pubs, no doubt about that. And what about not opening itself, Laura? I mean, you talked about the financial implications of that, but it must be hard in a village. I mean, I've talked quite a bit over the months about village pubs and the importance of the pub to village life and to the well-being of the village. How difficult has it been for, you know, for your locals, your regulars, and even for you not going in there every day and opening up?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of our sort of regular clients, what we sort of call our early doors clients, which are our bread and butter, you know, these are single guys, 50 plus, whose only social contact in a day is seeing us and talking to us. Now, they don't want to sit at a table 20 yards from where I'm stood behind the bar, sat on their own drinking a pint. They want to sit around the bar. They want to talk to me. They want to talk to anybody else that comes in, because, you know, other than that, they're not speaking to anybody all day. And we do keep in touch with a lot of them, you know, just checking that they're all okay and that. But those are the people that it impacts on. And, you know, we have a lot of older customers that their trip to the pub once a week is like the highlight of their week. Apart from that, they might go to the supermarket once and that's that. You know, it really does affect people, it's human contact. You know, they're not seeing people.
How much have you been able to open since March last year? I know it was lifted in the summer, but how much have you been able to trade in that time? It's not been that much, I don't think.
We think it was the 20th or the 23rd of March we shut, and then we opened on the 4th of July. So we were open for July, August, September, October. We shut for the whole of November because I think we had like a 4-week lockdown in November. Yeah, yeah. And then we did 3 weeks of December, and then we've been shut since then. So, you know, we've probably spent more than half the year closed.
And how do you deal with that? I mean, are you being philosophical about that, or is it a struggle? I don't want to get into mental health and that sort of thing, but
yeah.
I imagine it must drive you around the bend a lot of the time.
It does. I mean, we are literally like where our pub is, we are 10 yards from it. We had an old barn in the car park, which we converted, and that's where me and Rick live, and the boys and my parents live in the pub. So, you know, we see each other all the time. We're in and out of the pub. We'll sit and eat our tea in the pub. We'll sit and have a drink in the pub. So in terms of that, we're okay. I've got three boys, so it's full on here all the time. Rick's still working. We've got a dog. So, you know, I'm busy, busy, busy. I've not stopped seeing my friends, still see my friends. They pop round in the weeks. So, you know, life's not really been, apart from not working and the pub not being open, it hasn't been massively different for us, we're lucky, which we can do that here. You know, not everybody's got that freedom of not, we don't have tens of thousands of people walking past here. We have the odd walker every now and again, you know.
Yeah. Laura Layton is our guest, and Laura is the landlady of the Railway Inn, which is in Moberly in Cheshire, not far from Knutsford. It's a really beautiful part of the world, it really is. We've been talking about life in lockdown for pubs, and Laura's very fairly said, look, it's not been as bad for us as it has been for managed pubs where you have managers or tenants, which it's obviously much more difficult for them. Now let's talk about some of the things that are being proposed for... And again, a lot of this is up in the air. I've got to be a bit fair here and say... you know, while I have got very strong opinions about what I think they might want to do, this stuff isn't kind of set in stone yet, so I've got to be fair about that. But all sorts of rumours about, you know, pubs being asked when pubs reopen in a few weeks' time, obviously initially not being able to serve indoors, only outdoors, that's going to be a problem. But even later on when people can go inside to have a drink in the Railway Inn, that social distancing might still be, you know, kind of imposed on pubs. But then you have this discussion, Laura, around the possibility of people needing to show somebody like yourself that they've had a vaccine in order to come and have a pint. Now, I know you from social media. This is the first time we've kind of properly spoke, but I know the sort of person you are, and I know you'd be very reticent to do that. But sometime in the future, the government might say, listen, you've got to insist on that. It's all speculation. What are your thoughts on that now?
I just think it's just insane. Like, I mean, I just can't get my head around it. I just think it's crazy. What for the implication for us, for that would mean we would then have to employ somebody, I don't know, stood on the door checking everybody's phone when they come in. Or have you been vaccinated? Have you been vaccinated? Have you tested negative? You know, we're a very small outfit. We just can't afford to staff that. I mean, or I don't know if it's an app that you have to scan it or what, but it's just ludicrous. It's just the fact that we're actually talking about that we would need a passport to gain entry to a village pub is insane.
It's mad, isn't it? And yet I wonder, I mean, I know you'll still be in touch with, you're in the village, so you'll bump in, I presume you'll be bumping in all the time to some of your regulars. I wonder what do they think about it, because it's been such a miserable, rotten, horrible time for people. I remember you saying to me a year ago, you know, you'll have to pop in, and I thought to myself, well, damn right I'll pop in. You know, we like walking in your neck of the woods with our dogs, our dog now, and I thought that'll be lovely, but it's become an impossibility now, obviously. But I wonder what your locals would think about that, having to get the vaccine and then, you know, turn up and show you that piece of paper or that phone. I wonder what, has anybody spoken to you about that? Is it being discussed?
It hasn't, not really. But, you know, obviously I walk our dog quite a lot. And so you bump into people all the time. And the amount of people that are like, oh, have you had we've had our vaccine. Have you had your vaccine? I'm like, no, why would I have a vaccine? I'm, you know, I don't need one, kind of thing. But very, very few and far between around here that are sort of, what I would say, like with us, like of our thought of mind. I mean, you have the odd one and people all agree with you to a point, and then you can sort of see in their mind thinking, God, they're bloody crackers.
Yeah.
You know.
yeah.
But yeah, no, I think people are like, they what I call lip service. So they'll say what they want, what they think you want to hear. But a lot of compliance around here, very much so. I mean, the regulars that we have, the early doors crew, we've got like a fair few builders and stuff like that. With them, no, absolutely not. They all think it's absolutely insane. But sort of the older people who are, say, retired or sat at home on furlough, you know, they'll I'm sure happily go along with. They had to show a vaccine passport, they'd do it. My own parent, my dad's had the bloody vaccine today. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was livid with him. But you know, their thought is, well, we want to go on holiday, we want to retire, and we want to go on holiday, so we've got to have it to go on holiday.
Is
we'll
that
do
what,
it
is that know? What your dad said? Is that was the reason why he had it? He wants to go away. You see, again, I wouldn't have any criticism whatsoever for your dad. I mean, I wouldn't have any criticism for anybody who gets the vaccine. No. Everybody to their own. I think I'm lucky that I've been exposed to certain information. I think you're lucky that we saw things at a certain time. But for most people, they've never been exposed to it. So I don't blame them one bit for it. And God love your dad, right? He's worked hard all his life and he wants to go abroad now, Laura. Why not?
Yeah,
like?
Yeah, I know.
So he's had the vaccine.
Over this past this past year, we've had many discussions sat around the dinner table, you know, not forcing our views, but saying our views, like what we think, look at this, you know, don't take everything as you see it on the news, on the mainstream media, look elsewhere. You know, for months they were listening to Dr. Vernon and like, oh, have you heard this? Have you heard this? And then, you know, the next minute, turn around and they've gone and got the bloody vaccine.
Yeah, because I think they were listening to Dr. Vernon. And I think this is an age thing. I'm sure your parents are not that old, but I think
they are. They're about the 70.
Well, that's not that old. My pal Jean Anne is 70. She's listening to this and she's gone off you now, Laura.
Yes, I imagine.
Well, but your dad, right? I can imagine your dad and mum listening to Dr. Vernon Coleman because they would have read him in the papers and they know that he's not an idiot. They know that he's, you know, he's a smart guy. So on the one hand, they're like, yeah, it doesn't add up. But on the other hand, they're getting an avalanche of the other point of view from the news and they want to go on holiday, you know? Yeah. And that's it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, recently my mum's not been very well. She's been full of a cold and she rang the doctors because she when she gets a flu-like thing, she tends to be, she's had pleurisy, so it goes, she suffers with it really badly. So she rang the doctors, said, oh, she wanted some antibiotics. I was like, Mum, they're not going to give you antibiotics, it's viral. Well, I'm going to ring them anyway. Okay, you ring them. So first thing they say to her, oh, go and get a COVID test. And I'm like, Mum, don't do that. Why are you going to go and do that? You know, don't be daft. Off she goes to get a COVID test. Of course, she's positive, isn't she? Yeah. And I think that has sort of like gone, oh, God, well, we better go and get the vaccine now, you know.
So, yeah, and you're not the first person this week to tell me that Mum or Dad had it and they're, you know, tearing their hair out. Laura Layton is on the line, the landlady of the Railway Inn in Moberly in Cheshire. It's the greatest advertisement for Laura's pub ever. Because I'm proud to do this. I hope the Advertising Standards Authority are listening. When the pubs open up again, go and see Laura because she's not going to insist that you keep your distance and she's not going to insist on some of this lunacy, masks and all this sort of stuff. Could you, if these were different times and I was to say to you, Laura, sell the Great British Pub to me, sell the Village Pub, why are pubs so important? Why have they been so important historically? Why do they remain so important in our lives in the 21st century? Why?
Well, they're just the hub of the community. You know, it's where everybody meets up. Everyone's been at work for the day. They want to unwind, you know, come in for a pint, three or four pints before they go home and have the tea with the wife, or, you know, couples come in to see other couples that they just want social interaction. And we're really lucky. We've got a massive play area. We get loads of families and kids, you know, just playing in the garden. And it's just the hub of the village. You know, everybody that you might not see week in, week out, oh, well, you know, this date we're doing this at the pub. So everybody, we do quizzes, you know, we do all sorts of things. And it's just the hub of the village. And people just love coming to the pub. They love a pint. They love a glass of wine. And, you know, it's just a community feel.
And you'll always find what you need to find at a pub, won't you? If you need anything doing, I mean, I've had so many experiences over the years. You know, you want a bit of landscaping doing, or you want a bit of painting doing. I'm absolutely useless with my hands. I've never done anything for myself. I never will. And whenever anything needs doing, I generally try and find a person to do it. But yeah, the amount of times over the years, Laura, you know, I'll go into the local. I'm sure somebody will know somebody. And before you know it, you know, You'll get a whole, you'll get a full gamut of information. Pubs are hugely
important. If they don't know somebody, they'll know somebody that does know somebody that can help you.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's a good thing. You know, when if ever we've got something that needs doing at the pub, there's always a customer or somebody that will come and do it. You know, that we've got a guy that does painting, a guy that does building. We've got tree surgeons, we've got gardeners. You know, all different people that do marketing, people that do, you know, websites, all such a vast range of people that have got. And that's a good thing about the pub. It brings people that wouldn't probably ordinarily be to socialise together. It brings all those kind of people together.
It's one of the last places left on Earth where people interact with one another without technology, isn't it? People sit down together and speak about things, whether it's sport, whether it's the weather, whether it's anything. People are looking at one another and speaking to one another. If it goes, I mean, I hope you're in business for as long as you want to be in business, Laura, and please God you will be. But in the future, in you know, 10, 15, 20 years, if pubs are a thing of the past, it'll be devastating for human interaction, I think.
It would be so bad. I mean, you know, we've got three kids and we try and keep them offline as much as possible. But it's just constant. Like, you know, they want the latest Xbox or they want this Switch or they want an iPad. And we try and limit it as much as we can because, you know, when their friends come around and play, they don't give any of those things a second thought. They're outside in the garden running around making dens, you know, absolutely having the time of their lives. And then they're like, oh yeah, actually the internet's not that great when you can go and play with your mates in the garden. And I just genuinely hope that that's how it stays and not, you know, everything ends up online, which would be, well, just be horrendous, wouldn't it? I mean, we've done so many of these bloody Zoom calls, I can't bear them. I mean, what's the fun of getting drunk on a computer?
Have you done that? You've had a Zoom night out, have you?
Oh dear me, yeah, it's terrible. I refuse to do them now. If you want to come and have a drink with me, you can come to my house. I'm not doing it on a computer.
Yeah, yeah, I've not tried that now. I know the trigger warning lads do a Saturday night thing, and you know, fair enough. But no, I can't do it because I miss the boozer that much. Now, I wasn't, because of work and everything else and busyness, I certainly wouldn't have had the time to be going out to a pub two or three nights a week. But at least once a week, I like popping around to the local social club around the corner and having a drink there. And I miss it terribly now, not being able to do it. I really do. I can't wait to go back. I've had a message from Jean Anne. It was in the Irish News. Laura talked there about, earlier on, about, you know, some of the single gentlemen, maybe some of them older gentlemen, who would pop into the Railway Inn because it's where they get their company and it's where they socialise. And they're not able to do that. And it's terrible. The situation is exactly the same in Ireland. A postman discovered in Ireland, we think in Offaly recently, that an elderly man living on his own was writing to himself every day just so the postman would call, because the postman in lockdown was the only person he saw all week. Because he couldn't go to the pub.
That's really sad.
That's what it's doing to people, this. Yeah. It's driving people around the bend. Yeah.
We have an old chap, he's 93, and he drives himself up twice a week, comes and has his dinner, reads his paper, has a chat, and he generally doesn't see another soul at all. If he doesn't come to the pub, he doesn't see a soul. And I've got his number. I'll ring him up and just check that he's okay if he needs anything. But it's people like that that I mean, you know, he said to me last time he was in the pub, if I couldn't come to the pub and I couldn't see anybody, I might as well be dead.
And you're ringing him up to check on his well-being. How's he getting on? I mean, he must be struggling, is he?
He is. He's fine. He's okay. He pops to like the local supermarket and that, you know, I've said to him, because we've got so much food in our freezers, you know, and we can only keep it for so long. If you need any food, anything, I'll bring it round for you. Oh, I'll be all right. But, you know, just to check on him, to check he's okay. And he has no family, so he has nobody else to speak to. So people like that, you've just got to keep your eye on them, because that's what you do when you live in a village, don't you? You know, yeah. You just got to look after them.
You do. So as it stands, Laura, that's a lovely thing to say, by the way. And anybody listening to this, whether you live in a village or not, if you know somebody living on their own, knock on their door and have a chat with them and find out how they're getting on. It won't kill you to do that, by the way. And it'll be a lovely thing to do. As it stands, when can the railway in. When can you begin serving outdoors again? It's in April, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's April the 12th it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
46 sleeps.
You can't 46 sleeps till April 12th. You're counting the day, so you can't wait basically to get back open again.
No, we can't wait because we like the pub for us as well. It's our social life, you know. We enjoy it as much as everybody else does. All right, we might be working, but you know, it doesn't stop you having a drink later on in the evening. And it, I miss talking to people every day and finding out what's going on. We quite often in the pub on a Saturday afternoon, they have a little betting syndicate, so we'll all have a bet on the horses, and we're all sat there watching the racing. And it, you know, it's just I miss all that.
Great fun,
especially with Cheltenham coming up, because that's like the, you know, that week we're absolutely heaving normally.
Yeah. I had experience of it in Spain. My better half ran a popular pub in Spain on the Costa del Sol, on the other side, on the western side. And I had experience of that there, where you had British expats who lived there, you know, coming in for, you know, in the winter, coming in for a chat, for a bit of company, and all that entails as well. Listen, I'm hearing you loud and clear. Speaking of Rick there, I mean, you said, oh, it's lovely to socialise, and so I'm guessing it's Rick running up and down the cellar, is it? Changing the barrels and taking the deliveries and all of that malarkey. You're not doing it, are you, Laura? Tell the truth now, I'll know if you're lying.
Has nothing to do with it at all. He's a tree surgeon, so he's got his own business. But he likes coming in the pub and being a customer. But no, he's just not interested in being involved. He'll tolerate it, but he's not a massive.
He's not into it.
Yeah.
And do you think? and you know, in terms of the cask conditioned ale and all of that, is that something that you love? Do you love getting involved in that?
Yeah. So my dad's done it all. Well, he's done it for 30 odd years, nearly 40 years. But yeah, he's taught me all how to do it. So I can do it. I can put the barrels on the stillages, lift them up, and, you know, do all that business. And that's one of the problems that they're having, because they aren't giving you enough notice of when you're going to open. So to brew cask beer is sort of 3 or 4 weeks, and then it's got to settle and all that. So they're brewing it so quickly that when they're sending it out, it's so like what they call vent the barrel, which is put a hole in it and the air goes into it, and it's just spurting in the up to the roof because they're barreling in it so quickly that it's not had the right time to settle.
Right.
So then you're getting bad beer. All these things
that people never think of. And before we part company today, did you ever think of, I bet your dad did, did you ever think of having your own micro brewery and doing a pint of Leighton, a pint of Laura, do your own cascade? Yeah.
We have thought of that, but there's quite so many little brilliant breweries around us, and they're really good. So it was when it was my mum and dad had the pub for 30 years, so we had a party, and they brewed us a beer called Tony. My dad's called Tony, and they brewed us a beer called Tony's Tipple. So they will do things like that. They're really good. Like, so they'll name a beer whatever you want it to be, sort of for you, which is quite a good thing.
Sounds brilliant. I've not spoken to somebody who obviously loves the business as much as you do, and I mean that. I mean, I have, you know, met landladies and landlords over the years, and most of them are happy doing it, but you know, they do point out that it's difficult work, it's hard work, long hours, but you obviously love it, Laura. Thanks for speaking to us today. Great tweet, by the way. I hope more landladies and landlords will adopt the same approach as you and will say, look, I'm not telling people to keep apart, I'm not telling people not to shake hands and all of that garbage. So I hope it all goes well on April 12th, and I hope before too long this nonsense is behind us. And it's been nice to meet you properly today, so thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks ever so much, and hope to speak to you again in the future.
It'd be lovely to see you at the Railway Inn.
Absolutely, yeah, anytime.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Leighton there, Mobberley in Cheshire. That's where you'll find the Railway Inn. I've known Laura online only, really, through Facebook for the last couple of years, and she's adamant that she won't be telling people where they should and shouldn't sit and not to stand at the bar and all of that when the time comes to open the pubs back up again. It's exactly now, as far as I can tell, around about 3.5 minutes to the top of the hour. A little bit later, 15 or 20 minutes from now, we will be speaking with none other than the man himself, Gerald Celente, the publisher of the Trends Journal. He is in Kingston in New York, of course. Great guy. We love Gerald. And he joins me monthly for a chat about, well, everything and anything. We'll get the US We'll get the US perspective on lockdown and COVID, and we'll have a chat about the trends in the news. We'll talk about Joe Biden undoubtedly as well. Lots to get into with the one and only Gerald Celente here. I am Richie Allen then. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. This is The Clash, Train in Vain. 6 o'clock then, or thereabouts. It is Wednesday, the 24th of February, 2021. I haven't made that mistake thus far this year. I shouldn't make it now, should I? As we near the end of February, we're nearing the end of winter. How do you feel about that? Is that a good thing? I was chatting with the aforementioned Jean Anne this morning. I have this idea that as we get towards the end of winter, even though, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, to use that well-worn cliche, I think as we get to the end of winter, people are that knackered. You find people are often in bad form. This time of year, people are in their worst form. They should be in their best form. Now, of course, we have the scamdemic, which we haven't had in previous winters, of course. I do take that on board. But I tend not to be so gloomy once we get to the end of February. I start to think, well, thank God, we're getting to the end of the very dark mornings and, well, the very early dark evenings. It's lovely now going out. I generally depart the domicile round about 20 past six in the morning. I get up about 5:30, so I do. I take the little one, the little retriever, I take her downstairs and watch her running around like a lunatic until she does a number one and a number two. And then I watch some news and I read a newspaper till about 6:20. And of course, in the last couple of mornings, 6:20 has been much brighter than it has been previously. So I'm pretty delighted with the way things are going. And sure, there's a grand stretch in the evenings, isn't there? There's a grand stretch in the evenings. We used to have a thing back home. The first person to say that would get punched in the face once we got to February. The first person who says it is getting a slap across the puss. Don't be using cliches. But there is a grand stretch in the evenings, and I, for one, am chuffed about it. So I am. Let me tell you that John Waters, the Irish journalist, will return to the programme tomorrow. Really like my conversations with John Waters, or I should say I like listening to John. I do. John will be with me tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be another guest as well. And don't forget Sunday Morning Melodies, still relatively new. There are people still not even aware that programme goes out. I know this because I got an email from a long-time listener the other day who said, why didn't you tell us about this Sunday Morning Melodies thing? I do tell you about it. That's a Sunday morning programme between 10 and 12. It is a music-only programme. It has nothing to do with the Richie Allen Radio Show whatsoever. It's me playing a few tunes from yesteryear and talking about those tunes and how they were given birth to, how they came to be, basically. It's a bit of relaxation and musical enjoyment. Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock. So check it out if you haven't checked it out before. The thing about it is, you see, it isn't archived. And that is why a lot of people are not aware of it. It goes out on Sunday morning. It then repeats on the website for a few hours. And then it disappears, never to be heard or seen ever again. Ever again. David isn't very optimistic about April 12th. I hope that Laura has ceased listening. I hope Laura has gone to do something with the kids. David says, Richie, I wouldn't count on April 12th. Was April 12th the night the Titanic went down? Was it? Was it? Or was it April 14th? I can never remember. It's either 12th or 14th. Did she set sail on April 12th only to hit the iceberg? Haha. On the 14th? I don't know. Tell me. I'm not going to look it up. I don't have the time nor the inclination. David says, wouldn't count on April 12th because if the naughty people don't have their vaccination, their non-vaccination. Yeah. If you're just joining the programme, we heard from the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Jonathan Van Tam, earlier on. He told the media this morning that the reason that the vaccine rollout has slowed down a bit is, he said, because of fluctuations in vaccine production and delivery. I think his nose grew about a quarter of an inch when he said that. But I have no proof of that. None. It's just my opinion. I think they're hitting a little bit of a brick wall in terms of take-up. Because they got it into the arms. They injected hope into the arms of millions of seniors. Because the seniors couldn't wait to get the vaccine. right? But I think as they've come down the age groups, I think they are meeting resistance. I really do believe that. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. And now they're making up porkies to explain why that is. So, yeah. Diane, how you doing, Diane? I miss our pub, Richie, because it was our local news source and a good place to catch up with local events. No doubt. No doubt. Alan says in Liverpool, pubs are essential, whether they be trendy wine bars or nice country pubs. I've played a few. One near Mould was really nice. I just hope the industry bars all MPs for life. That would be the thing. Could you get a consensus? Could you get landlords, publicans, landladies around the country? Could you? To come together and say, we're going to ban all MPs. We're going to ban all members of the House of Lords. We're going to ban councillors. We're going to ban local city councillors. If you're a politician, you're not coming in. Wouldn't it be great? But then you'd be a hypocrite to agree with that. Discrimination is wrong, full stop, dear listener. Or House on Twitter says, Richie, the UK government thinks no one will speak up for non-citizens. Subjects. And then he's asking me to share something. I'll get into that, my friend. I'll have a look at it later on. I can't read it now. That's the thing about Twitter. I can't do that now. Gavin says, Richie, if pubs don't get together and stop the insanity, they will not survive. Vaccine passports, distancing, no one at the bar, screens between tables, masks when not seated. It is complete bollocks, tweets Gavin to me. Gavin, amen, brother. You'll get no arguments from me, son. You'll get no arguments from me. Faisal says, Richie, I pretty much stopped going to the pubs after the smoking ban, but I will make a point of visiting any pub I know as it goes against this COVID bollocks, says Faisal. Amen. Now it remains to be seen, doesn't it? It remains to be seen. Will the government insist that the owners of pubs like Laura, or the managers of managed pubs or tenants, will they be compelled by the government to demand to see the vaccine passport as a condition of entry? Will they be? This is the $64 million question. Why would you introduce a vaccine passport unless you were going to compel business owners to go along with the programme, so to speak? And I think that's the more likely outcome, sadly. And I don't like to be fear-mongering. Be Jesus. I don't like to be fear-mongering. I don't agree with fear-mongering. Fear-mongering is a terrible thing. So, I don't know. I also don't like murdering. I don't like murdering.
You know, murdering done around here, I don't mind telling you.
In case you're thinking I'd murder a pint. Bill says he will not be going back to any pub that asked for him to sign in, that asked for masks, that says table service is compulsory or social distancing. It's either the old way or nothing for me, says Bill. That's pretty much how I feel. You know, I wouldn't go back. I mean, if they didn't ask for the passport, but they insisted on social distancing and they insisted that you had to sit at your table and do table service and keep a distance from the table next to you, I wouldn't go back to that. For me, it's the old way or the highway. So I might never see the inside of a pub again, maybe. I don't know. It's 6:08. Hi to Ian. How you doing, Ian? Thanks for that tweet there. Let me have a look at that. It's Wembley Stadium and the Euros final. Wow. Yeah, apparently, if you believe the Sun newspaper, which doesn't have a great history now of telling the truth, it must be said, especially around football and football supporters. The Sun has a terrible track record. But anyway, Ian, good of you to send me the story. Wembley Stadium to hold 90,000 fans for Euros final under plans to use, well, the NHS app to show that people have been vaccinated. Yes. The Sun claims that this summer's European Championships final, which will be held at Wembley, is planned to fill Wembley, but only with people who use the NHS app to show they have been vaccinated. That's according to The Sun. And that was in The Sun today. Again, Ian, thanks for that, but you never know. You never know when it comes to the sun. Right, all righty. Here's the tune from Macy Gray then. Back with more, and Gerald Celente will be on the programme shortly, live from Kingston in New York City. This is I Try. Macy Gray on the Richie Allen Radio Show. That is I Try. What a song that is. 1999. Yes, the Titanic sank on April 15th. The night of April 15th. I cannot hear the name Titanic without laughing my hairy backside off at the future Mrs. Allen, who came out with that amazing line. I'll never forget it as long as I live. Watching a quiz show on the television. In which film was the line, "We're going to need a bigger boat," uttered? The Titanic, said the future Mrs. Allen. The Titanic. It could have been an entirely different movie.
Is there anyone there?
Yes, what do you see?
Iceberg, right ahead!
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lookout. Iceberg, we're going to need a bigger boat! Can we get a bigger boat? Indeed we can. Right, we'll be speaking to Gerald Celente right soon, live from Kingston in New York. Anything you'd like me to say to Gerald, do tweet it. You can follow him, by the way, on Twitter as well, the one and only. He's on Twitter, it's at Trends Journal. No, it's not, it's at Gerald Celente. Yes, it's at Gerald Celente. Do follow him. Do check out Trends in the News, which is a very funny YouTube series. So it is. Been doing it for a long, long time, for decades now. Accurately predicting the old economic and political trends has Gerald Celente. Before I forget to do it again later on, because I know you love him, John Waters, the Irish journalist, will be on the programme tomorrow. Coming up right soon, probably next week, hopefully Spiro Skouras will be back on the programme. I love Spiro. James Perloff will be on the programme. And in a few weeks' time, Dr. Joseph Mercola, is that how you say it? Dr. Joseph Mercola or Mercola. I interviewed him years ago when I was in Spain and had a good chat with him. But he's got a very interesting book coming out and he was kind enough to send it to me. And it's coming out in April. So in a few weeks' time, I'm going to have an extended chat with him about all things coronavirus and other matters as well. So you don't want to miss him. Dr. Joseph even Mercola will be on the programme right soon. But it's that time of the month again. Delighted, as always, to welcome back to the programme my friend, I look forward to these chats every month, the brilliant producer of the, well, must-read Trends Journal, live from Kingston. There is nobody like him in the world, our friend Gerald Celente. Welcome back, Mr. Celente. How are you?
Well, thank you so much, Mr. I really appreciate being on with you.
Well, thanks for everything you do, and thanks so much to Laura and everybody else who makes sure that I get the journal weekly. I don't deserve it, but I take it anyway. Yeah. It's brilliant stuff. And listen, before we get into what's in the journal, how have you been since we last spoke? How have you been there? Because you've got a new president, obviously, who's, I think you spoke with just after the inauguration. And it's been busy. It's hardly been dull. How have things been?
Well, life is no fun. They suck the joy out of life. And everybody's freaked out with this virus, and nobody wants to look at the facts. First of all, again, Richie, I want to thank you for all that you do, and what a brave man you are in spreading freedom, peace, and justice. So thank you for having me on.
Thanks, mate.
And for your courage. Everything's really connected. You know, that's what our system is called, Globalnomic, the trend forecasting. All things are connected. So if you look at just economics, you're not seeing social changes, geopolitics, et cetera. So in talking about what we're talking about and how am I, and how people are, they're freaked out and they don't want to know the facts. The journal just came out yesterday. What is it, 140-something pages, no advertisement.
Yeah.
I've never worked harder in my life. Anyway, the story about Israel and now you got to get a green passport. Isn't that a nice name to use?
Wow.
Green passport that you've been vaccinated. So then you read the data. And again, Jerusalem Post, I'm not making this stuff up. They can't ban me for saying this. These little low-life slimy boys with cojones smaller than a mothball, like that little Zuckerberg or that other freak, one after another, the clown, the cooks, all these little boys of nothing, they can't censor me for saying this. 87%, remember that number, 87% of the people who died from the virus in Israel are 65 and older. And now you got to get a vaccination so that you could go out and live a normal life. You get a green passport. How's life? I see little stupid freaks driving in their cars with their windows up,
yeah,
with a mask on. I got this little clown boy of nothing, a little piece of crap. The mayor of New York, de Blasio. F you, de Blasio. Your last name is Wilhelm, and you use that to get the Italian votes, you piece of crap, because your mother's part Italian. So anyway, he says now to wear two masks until June. Yeah, what, are you going to cover your ass because that's what the shit's coming out from? Yeah, well, that's for the second mask is for? So people buying this crap and looking up to these low lives that are destroying their lives, that's how I feel. I'm disgusted with the lack of courage of people. And they say, oh, Silenti, calm down, bend over and take it up like we do.
Yeah, but you never will. The fear, the fear, right?
No way.
No way.
That's not the way I was raised. You know, I'm so blessed to have the parents I had, the family I had. May they all rest in peace. My mother, they all rest in peace. My mother, when I was a little kid, and I didn't know what happened, but a situation broke out, and she'd look at me, and she'd say, "Hey, cowards." And I didn't know what the word meant until I knew what the word meant. You know, I would never disrespect my mother and be a coward. I've done other stuff that she wouldn't have been happy about, my own. But really, and you know, my father too. You know, when I was a kid, and I'd be shooting my mouth off, and he'd say to me in Italian, "Papagallo, parrot, stop repeating what everybody else is saying and think for yourself." I was the littlest kid growing up in the Bronx. I learned how to fight right away. You know, you didn't go home crying. And that's the other thing. Could you imagine, you know, just briefly, I'll tell you, they couldn't control me. So my older brother who passed away, it took me to go into Catholic school so I'd get discipline. And then a nun beat me up and perforated my middle ear, broke my eardrum. And I was 10 years old. And 10 years old, I was water skiing in the Hudson River, going over the wakes of ships when I used to go up and down the river in those days.
Yeah,
and I could no longer get my ears wet.
Yeah.
And I lost my fight. And she left me back. So I became the stupidest kid in the school. I'm mentioning this because I had to learn how to fight again. And as you know, I taught close combat for many years, had my own school. But the point that I'm making is I had to learn how to fight. As the littlest kid, I was the toughest kid. You have it in you. When you see little dogs barking at big dogs, you don't look at the size. In the fight, you don't look at the size of the person. You're going in to kill them. What I'm saying to you is that you don't have to teach a dog, a cat, a mouse, a rat, a squirrel. You don't have to teach any animal how to fight. It's in their spirit to fight. It was in the spirit of the human beings to fight. You don't have to learn how to fight. They've sucked the fight out of us. Look what they call these people. The Royal Highness. Yeah, Highness, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Royal F.U. Oh, how about dignitaries, lawmakers, officials? Yeah, official pieces of shit. So they've taken the fight out of people, and that's what's going on now. In 2020, the whole world changed. Because the people took orders. How can you take orders from a piece of crap like Boris Johnson? A nothing Biden. Been sucking off the public tit since he's 30 years old. They've never worked a day in their lives.
Never.
That's how I feel. That the people have to learn how to fight. Grow the hell up.
You're pissed off with people, but you're a humanitarian and a pacifist. and you're a people person. You had your own experiences of running very big campaigns in New York. So I know that you've got a lot of love for people. Gerald Celente is the guy, if he's in a bar, is making friends with people and introducing himself to people and getting to know people. So I know you're angry at people's capitulation, but I know that you love people.
Oh, yeah, I love life.
Yeah.
You got to my place up here. I've had over, in my office alone, I have over 200 plants. And I water all of them. I don't even have people come. I surround myself with beauty. I have art everywhere. I restored three beautiful buildings in Kingston on the most historic four corners. So some of them restored. I did other work in them, but one I totally put tons of money into. To preserve the history and beauty of what life is. I'm an American. I was born to be free. If I was born in Alta Villa Pina, Vica Quens, over in Napoli, I wouldn't be me. I'd be caught into the system. I was born in the Bronx, born to be free. And now look at Italy. What a shame. By the way, I got turned off from Italy back in 2015 when I went to the World's Fair over there, brought to you by McDonald's and Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And listening to I actually have a cousin, Vinny. My cousin Vinny over there. And the fan wanted to meet me in Milano. We're going out to dinner. They're all complaining about, oh, we can't do this, we can't do that. I said, what are you guys doing about it? And they said, what are we going to do? And my heart dropped. And I spent a lot of time in Italy. I used to date a woman from Bolzano. But anyway, so I was going, I never wanted to go back again. And now look what they've done. They were the first state, the first country to close down when the virus hit last year. And now they brought in Mario Draghi. Yeah.
We know
Mario Draghi to drag him down. A guy that was with the World Bank.
Yeah.
A guy that ran the Goldman Sachs gang European division. A guy that was the head of the European Central Bank that brought negative interest rates. So the little people of Slavelandia don't have savings accounts and can't save any money. But the bigs could get bigger because they could borrow money for nothing. And then that slimy piece of crap buys junk bonds from corporations and the people have to pay for it, and they call it quantitative easing. That's the Italians. They just brought him in as prime minister.
They have done, and our chancellor here, Rishi Sunak, is a Goldman Sachs graduate as well. I'll ask you this because this has been on our minds since I do a phone-in show every now and then, and we get calls from everywhere, and they're unscreened, Gerald, so they come in from anywhere. And a lovely lady called Claire phoned in from Belfast the other evening. And she's a bit of an economist. And she said that she sees a big fiat currency crash coming. An end to money. A digital system of credit coming in where, you know, cashless society becomes absolutely the norm. And a raid on people's savings in their own banks. A raid on their savings justified to pay off the loans that were borrowed, the money borrowed to deal with coronavirus. And she's very, very concerned about that. What do you say to that? No better man than you to speak to that.
Well, we've been writing about this for, you know, several years.
Decades.
And matter of fact, one of the covers of the Trends Journal going back to last year, just around this time, was we're going from dirty cash, because they're going to say you don't want to touch that dirty cash, you're going to die, you get the virus, to digital trash. And all the banks are going to go digital, all the central banksters, so they could track every penny that you spent, where you spent it, how you spent it, who you spent it on. It's like you go into a restaurant, right? And you leave the waiter a tip in cash because, you know, you don't want to. Can't do that anymore. And the waiter now got to claim that cash. You go to the barber, the hairstylist, you give them a tip in cash, you pay. Now they got to claim everything. So these low-life pieces of garbage, scum, crap that morons and imbeciles call politicians that never work a day in their lives, now they get your money in taxes so they could keep doing nothing. And then they give their buddies and their friends the jobs. They're called bureaucrats. Again, I've been in the system. A bureaucrat is usually low-life people that can't get a job or earn a living, but they get into the political system and they suck up to anybody and do what they want to get the job. So they're going to go digital. I disagree on the thing that they're going to raid our savings. What they'll do when they go digital and come up with a new cash, they'll just wipe out the debt artificially, say we're coming up with a new currency, and then they'll devalue what you have. Inflation will go way up.
Yeah.
And what they will do also, they'll steal anything they can from you any way they can. And I'm not making this up. There was happened in 1933 with a guy named FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who called a bank holiday. Yeah. It's a holiday. We'll steal your money anyway. You can't own gold anymore. You got to sell the gold back to the government, I think for like $22 or $26 an ounce. It's against the law to hold gold. And then when they got everybody's gold, they raised the price to $33 an ounce.
Yeah.
These are criminals. When the hell are people going to grow up? Murderers and thieves. Got it?
And it was ever thus. Can I just say that our economist friend from Belfast is in pretty much agreement with you on the debt forgiveness. And I'm not just saying this because Gerald is here. I don't have to pay compliments to Gerald Celente for any reason. But he has been writing about this in the Trends Journal for years. Trendsresearch.com, subscribe to the journal. Now, Claire agrees with you on the debt forgiveness aspect and the hyperinflation. She is concerned about one thing, though. And that is because our banks are borrowing our governments are borrowing hundreds of billions to pay for coronavirus, to keep people unemployed and all of that. She reckons that it might collapse the commercial banks. And the money you have in those banks won't be safe, even if the government has previously said, you know, we will guarantee your deposits up to a certain amount. Like in the UK, the government says, if you've got £85,000 in the bank and the bank collapses, don't worry, we'll cover that £85,000 maximum. But Claire worries that if the banks collapse under the debt of the COVID bailouts, the government will say, we're really sorry, we can't give you back that money, it's just disappeared. Does she have a point, do you think?
The government will screw over you any way they can. Of course she does.
Yeah.
Look, they're murderers and thieves. And those aren't empty words.
No.
The Federal Reserve, what Federal Reserve? Private banks brought to you by another piece of scum, crap, shitty, rotten hell, Woodrow Wilson, who brought the central banksters to take over the nation in 1913. And I say rotten hell because he brought the doughboys to fight World War I, which we had no business getting involved in. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yeah, that's the same way they sold the crap wars, COVID war, any war. So she's 100% right. They'll do anything, any way. The central banksters, as I was saying, they bailed out, when I say they're murderers and thieves, $29 trillion, the Federal Reserve, according to the Levy Institute, Bard College, pumped into the other central banks in America, into banks in America and around the world when the panic of 08 hit. $29 trillion. And yeah. Murderers? Look at that piece of crap you got, Blair. How about that other boy, you had before him, after him. What was it, Cameron? What was that? What was his name?
Well, you're right. You had Theresa May before, but before Blair, you had John Major.
No, after Blair,
Gordon Brown, and then David Cameron. You're right, David Cameron.
Yeah. And how about Sarkozy? How about Obama, the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner? I want that guy Gaddafi out of there. We're gonna destroy Libya. Oh, you did a great job. Murderers and thieves. Biden, there wasn't a war that low-life piece of scum didn't vote for. Murderers and thieves. Get it in your head, everybody. It's one big club, as George Carlin said, and you ain't in it.
And you're not in it. The Trends Journal this week, World War Vax, a striking cover. Trendsjournal.com is the website. We've got Gerald Celente on from Kingston in New York City. You don't have to go into this. Our conversations are fairly
I don't know, they flow. We go to different places. We don't have any set agenda. The vaccine, you're obviously talking about it in the journal this week. A lot of people are very concerned about the vaccine because it's brand new. It's been rushed to market. And they remember the swine flu vaccine injuries, and people are nervous about taking it. Should they be?
Well, you know, the motto of the Trends Journal is think for yourself. I mean, how many pages do we have on vaccine information there? Yeah. And all solid data. To me, why would anybody look up and obey and believe anything from a group of drug lords? That's all they are. They're drug dealers. You know, in America, we got that another, again, a slimy, murderous piece of low-life garbage scum crap, Bill Clinton. He was the guy that allowed the drug companies to advertise on TV. So now you watch these drug ads. And, oh, you know, you got this or that. Take this or that. And they're singing and dancing, you know. It's like, da, 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 and little birds flying over their heads. Yeah. And then they have 30 seconds of the negative effects of this. And I say to myself, how could anybody take this crap? And that's what it is. Why would anybody with a vaccine? Again, we write the data. It usually takes between 12 and 10 years, 10 to 12 years to do the study on long-term effects. This thing was Operation Warp Speed. Yeah, a warp. There's no way in the world I'm taking this. I should say no way in hell I'm taking this vaccination.
What about the prospect? You mentioned, and it's an important story, the Israeli green passport. Now, you are on top of what's happening in the UK. So this week, vaccine passports are back on the agenda, not necessarily exclusively for travelling overseas, but vaccine passports to get to the cinema, to go and see a movie, or to even go and have a meal in a restaurant. Now, I know you're the real deal. I've known you for years. You put your money where your mouth is, and you're not a tough talker. You're a tough guy. I know that. What if they say to a man who loves getting out, a social animal like Gerald Celente, tell you what, Mr. Celente, no more restaurants in Kingston, New York for you unless you've got a vaccine passport. What do you do then?
No way I would get it. I'm not going to risk my life for that. And I'm fighting this. Again, look at what we're doing. I mean, look, like you said, the covers. There's no covers of magazines like this.
No.
Those are by Anthony Frieda, by the way. You know, and this guy's internationally renowned for his work. He does these covers. They're New Yorker covers, 21st century. No, there's no way in the world. I'm going to keep fighting this. And as we said, the cover of his Vax, World War Vax. There's going to be a fight against people like myself and others that are not going to bend over to the drug dealers and get the shot. And as you said, and the same thing in Israel, the passport will allow you to go to restaurants, gyms, social, you know, cultural, sporting events, whatever, entertainment, concerts. There's no way. There's going to be a fight against this. But don't people understand this is just the beginning? They do this step by step. And I have to tell you, there's something bigger going on here, you know, that's beyond, you know, as I say, you know, they found, what, a skull 30 million years old. Yeah, I know. The whole world began when, you know, Moses came down with 10 commandments, save it. You know, we don't have a clue what happened. You know, there were more galaxies like than grains of sand. To me, this is either satanic, alien, or something that's beyond the human brain to understand. And because how the whole world has conformed to this and how they're not fighting back as their lives and livelihoods by the hundreds of millions are being stolen from them is beyond my understanding.
It's to your absolute credit that you've got an open mind and that you look at Satanism and you look at even something, you know, metaphysical, something beyond this world. I think you're onto something there. I really do. I think transhumanism, and I know, again, this has come up in the journal over the years. It really has, folks. Gerald and his colleagues at the journal have covered these issues over the years. Transhumanism and changing what human beings are, that's definitely an agenda. There's no denying that, right?
Yeah, it's happened.
Yeah.
It's happened. Look at the young people, how tech addicted they are. I mean, it's a freak show. You see people walking down, bent over, looking at their cell phones with a mask on. I mean, you couldn't make this up if you did a cartoon in 1990. You would be able to make it up. And how people are addicted to online and don't socialize. And again, things were going down before this happened. You know, I don't own a, I have a cell phone. I don't have one. I had an old flip phone. And when I travel, which I don't do much anymore, I carry it with me, you know, so they tell the car to pick me up at gate number 7 at the airport.
Yeah, yeah.
And my office, I've been traveling, you know, I've been since 1974, you know, I got in the business world. When you get to the hotel, they call you. And, you know, life isn't going to stop and change if I answer the phone right away. So I did research for the cellular telecommunications industry back in 1994 when they had these big boxes in the trunks of cars with the aerials and for cell phones. And I've been studying the radio frequency radiation since then. So to me, why would anybody risk their lives with these? And you're seeing the fertility rates going way down. And again, radio frequency radiation is real. 5G is real. And so what I'm saying is that the whole world has changed. They say in the King James Bible, the meek shall inherit the earth. They got it wrong. Take out the M and stick in a G. The geeks have inherited the earth.
Yeah.
Look at what they've done. There's humanity is lost. Again, you know, I'm a guy, without going into a lot of stories, I heard some of the greatest jazz cats playing when I was 11 years old live. And I fell in love with the old music of the time. And then in the mid-1980s, they started, you know, digitizing music. And I remember getting in an argument with a guy, almost broke out into a fight down in Little Italy in the city in New York. And the guy worked for NBC and how happy he was that they didn't have to pay musicians because they could digitize the music. I said, it's not the same, man. Oh, yes, it is. I said, no, it's not.
There's
no spirit. There's no breath. There's no heart.
No soul.
Oh, it is too. I said, screw you. So they've taken the life out of us. The geeks have inherited the earth. Look at Zuckerberg. Look at Cook. Look at that guy running Google Alphabet. These aren't men. They're gutless slime.
And Amazon has taken over the world of books, isn't it? I mean,
and look at him.
Yeah.
Look at him. Look at Bezos. You want to see a cat from another planet? And look what they give back to society. Nothing. 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 They
crap
throw
jobs.
Pennies. Pennies. Look at Gates. Gates is 10 years younger than me. He looks 10 years older.
Yeah, he does.
What's
yeah.
that? He got a mop on his head? Is that real hair? And this guy telling me what to do? How about go screw yourself?
Is that why they look thick? You're a very spiritual man. And you're a Christian man. Is that why they look sick because of what they do? Is it bound to show up on your countenance, on your face?
Yes.
Yeah.
A picture speaks 1,000 words.
Yeah.
You look in the eyes. You look at them. You look at the what they're putting out. Again, look at them. Look at them. Look at Johnson. Look at Macron. Look at Draghi. Look at Merkel. I don't know if you can, but try to, you know. Look at the guy. Look at what they just did over here in America. Look it up, everybody. Rachel Levin, L-E-V-I-N-E.
Yeah.
The guy, oh, he's a woman now. He became the health secretary of the United States.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the first book I worked on was Natural Healing back in the mid-1980s. I have an honorary doctor from the National University of Health Sciences for the work I've done in integrative complementary medicine. You look at this guy. This guy got more chins than Chinatown. And she's telling me about health? And you call yourself a health minister? How about go screw yourself? Or maybe, hey, Rachel, somebody else will.
Thank God that I'm not regulated yet, because if I was, I'd be off the air by now. But I don't disagree with any of that. I don't know.
Again, I could care if you're straight, gay, black, white, woman. Show me who you are. Show me what you've done.
I know you mean that.
When I look at a clown like that guy, the shape that she, he is in, and you're calling yourself the health secretary? Yeah. Get the hell out of here.
And I know you mean that. I know you do when it comes to what a person is, what they believe, what their sexuality is. I know that you couldn't care less. Yeah. Let me ask you this, because when I was writing this story today, I thought of you, and I thought, if you read this in the New York press this morning, which you probably did, I could imagine you having a bit of a fit in your office there in Kingston. But in Brooklyn, in Buffalo, in New York, the school district in Buffalo has taken out a new curriculum, or has introduced a new curriculum to teach children that all white people are complicit in perpetuating systemic racism.
Yeah,
you saw this, right? Now, my worry is, look, I have no problems with any person of colour talking about racism historically and the impact it has on us today. I have no problems with children being teaching that. But it seems to me what they want to do in Brooklyn, and I'm going to be pretty blunt here, it almost seems like they want to tell children, basically, white is bad and black is good. Silence is violence. If you're not speaking out against racism, you must be racism. And if you don't acknowledge that you've got unconscious bias, you're a really bad person. That is almost child abuse to me. How do you see this?
Well, let's talk about racism in America. Are there racists in America? Oh, yeah. Are there anti-Semites? Yep. People that hate Italians? Of course. You know, one after another.
Yeah.
Don't call America a racist nation. Wasn't there a guy by the name of Barack Obama that's a couple of shades darker than me, the president of the United States? A racist nation doesn't elect a black guy.
Yeah.
Oh, and how about other black murderers like Colin Powell? Oh, you remember him under Bush. What was he, secretary of what? Defense or state or something? Yeah, way up there telling the United Nations, holding up his crap of colon,
yeah,
that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda. Hey, how about that other black woman? What's her name? Condoleezza Rice? Oh, yeah. The next mushroom cloud you see? Oh, yeah. Selling the Iraq war? Oh, and how about Susan Rice? That guy Gaddafi got to get out of there. Oh, she was under Obama. She was black, too. Oh, and who did they just bring in as vice president? Kamala Harris. What a racist nation. All right? It's all BS.
And what
they've done, and you're talking about kids. Look how they got little kids freaked out wearing masks.
Yeah.
You know how many young... You know what the recovery rate is from people 1 to 20 years old if they get the virus? 99.997%.
Yeah,
That is according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. You look up the data. You know how many young people died, like 1 to 20 years old in America, since a year, under 20 years old? Probably about what? 30, 50, maybe 100? Oh, and why? Couldn't be obesity. No. No, yeah, well, it does. And America is only 40% obese. Respiratory ailments, type 2 diabetics. This isn't killing young people. As I said, it's killing older people. Canada, 80% of the people that have died came from nursing homes, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm saying is now they're freaking out little kids, having little kids wearing masks, making that normal, washing their hands with those sanitizers that are not good for your body because that stuff's going into your blood system. They're chemicals, right? Chemicals. So you're talking about kids being freaked out with this racist stuff on and on, and gender equality and on. Look, when the sexual revolution happened, I'm down in the village, the West Village. I mean, you couldn't sleep at night on Friday, Saturday nights.
Right, you can imagine. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was wild.
Yeah.
Nobody cared. You know, that your friends came out of the closet. It was a wild time. It was a wild, wild time. And then it became an identity thing later on. The people that are going to be racist, sexist, are going to be morons anyway, and you're not going to teach them to be different. It's in your heart, your soul, and your mind as you evolve.
Yeah.
And the education system, it's ironic you asked me that, because just this morning I was thinking, what a disgrace the public school system is.
Wow.
In America. We spend more than any other country and we don't even win place or show according to OECD data compared to others in math, science, and other categories of learning. It's a total disgrace. They steal our money, and the public education system is a joke.
You would have laughed this weekend. You probably saw this. Liverpool police, Merseyside police, introduced a big billboard, and it was entitled "Being Offensive is an Offense." That basically hurting somebody's feelings is an offense, and they want to know, they want the public to ring them up. I could ring up and say, "Oh, that guy Salente called me an Irish so and so," which I am, and you might get a phone call from the police. These are they're wacky, crazy, scary at times. I'm going to give you the final word as usual. Before I give you the final word, I count the days, my friend, to you coming on here every month. I love having you on. Go to trendsresearch.com. Subscribe to the Trends Journal. It is a terrific read. It really is. It's been accurately predicting where things are going for decades now. And you have been listening to our friend Gerald Salente, live from Kingston, New York. Final word to you today, my friend. I've loved having you on as always.
Yeah, for everybody to reach to the highest level you can. And that's the most important thing. And if you're having trouble now and things are bad, and it happens in life to everyone. I had a guy screw me out of hundreds of thousands of dollars, and rather than going down, I doubled up. I doubled up on my diet. I doubled up on my workouts. I doubled up on my meditations. I doubled up. So when you're going down, double up. So whatever problems you're having, get in the best shape you can, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And I'm a warrior for the Prince of Peace. You know, I will not take orders from murderers and thieves. And my mission in life is freedom, peace, and justice. Nobody's here to tell you what to do or how to do it. And you don't tell anybody else what to do. But we are now under the complete control of the system. And if we don't fight for our freedom, we're going to be living hell on earth. This is just the beginning. And you can see it with the whole vaccination, the passports, and everything else. And please consider subscribing to the Trends Journal if you want to know what's going on, what it means, what's next to help you prepare and prevail ahead. There's no other magazine like it in the world. And I also say this because the more subscribers we have, the more we can do. And everything we do the best we can to help. So please consider subscribing, because the future is in your hands. So don't drop it.
Brilliant, my friend. Have a great rest of your week, rest of your day there, and we'll do it all again next month. Thanks, Gerald.
And thank you, Mr. Allen, for all that you do.
It's an honor. Thank you, Gerald Salente, live from Kingston in New York. Trendsresearch.com is the website. Check it out if you haven't before. Yeah, that's Le Freak from Chic on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is Wednesday's program. Not too many tech issues tonight. The gremlins are asleep, I think. I'm glad about that. If you're brand new to the program, that doesn't sound very professional. It doesn't. But there isn't anything more professional than this radio show. I've got a state-of-the-art studio here. Bells and whistles, as good as anything you'll find in any commercial radio station in the country. But there has been an issue in the last day or two. I don't have an engineer on call because I'm not the BBC. I'm the BBG. I'm on my own, on my lonesome, but I will have it dealt with on Friday. Only one more programme to get through before then. That's tomorrow, where John Waters will be the guest, the Irish journalist. One of the guests, I should say. My friend Hayden Hewitt, whom I did mention, I think, at the beginning of the programme. He's drawn attention to something on Twitter. Speaking of these culture wars and this gender bollocks, you know, this trans women are real women and trans rights are human rights and all of that jazz. A company, I cannot determine right now where the company is based, but a company has produced a life-sized rubber baby called the Butt Baby. And the Butt Baby is meant to be stuck in the back passages of men who want to be women, trans women. A trans woman is a man who wants to identify as a woman. Now, a man who identifies as a woman cannot give birth, but a company has seen to that. We'll see about that. And they've introduced a baby, a fully insertable, anatomically correct rubber baby that can be shoved up your arse. And presumably the man who identifies as a woman can then experience childbirth by pushing the more than 1 foot long and 1 foot in diameter rubber baby out of his hairy arse. And I'm not making that up. Trust Hayden Hewitt to discover that. The butt baby. An actual life-sized, anatomically correct, fully insertable, 100% platinum, silicone, newborn baby boy. I'm going to absolutely over-egg this pudding. The baby is meant to be shoved up your rectum. If you're a man who thinks that you're a woman, and you can push it out, and you have a baby. And I've not made that up. And neither has the great friend of mine, Hayden Hewitt, made that up either. Do it. Get a butt baby. I'm going to order a butt baby on Amazon. And I'm going to give birth. I've been the BBG. Thanks so much to the lovely Laura Layton, the landlord from the Railway Inn in Moberly in Cheshire. Thanks, Laura Layton. Really enjoyed speaking with you. And to Gerald Salente. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Speak again tomorrow, Wednesday at 5 o'clock. I've been the BBG. Bye now. Butt baby.